The thing about ligaments, like I have a stretched ligament in my wrist, and it does cause my wrist to hurt, depending on what I'm doing. And I asked them, like, what, you know, even with surgery, what I could do. And they were like, basically, if we did surgery, we'd have to go in, cut, like, you can't just, like, move it or do something with it. Like, they'd have to cut it and then tie it together. And then it could stretch again. So, there's nothing you can really do with ligaments. They basically, I think they try building up the muscles around it so that any strain on the ligament is potentially lessened.
Craig, would you say you've had success building up the muscles around your wrist?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there like any specific exercise you do for that? Or?
It's, you know, have you seen the exercise for a shake weight?
Yes.
Yeah, you have to do that, but without a shake weight, but and also below your waist. It's especially important.
How did I know I was going to come here and you guys were going to be talking about shake weights?
We have to build up strength in Craig's wrist. So we were discussing possible ways to do that.
Okay.
It's about technique.
Yeah, it's all in the wrist is really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Craig, do they recommend like lots of shorter instances of this sort of exercise or long instances that are spaced far apart?
You really want to get into like an alternating rhythm is what I've found. Oh, okay. Is that like, okay, you know, maybe start with like some long, luscious strokes, you know?
Episode 73 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball perspectives podcast focused solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined, as always, by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. So good evening, guys. It is great to speak with you again. How are you feeling about the short-term seasonal apprenticeship that is life?
I feel pretty knowledgeable, like I'm ready to graduate into some sort of indentured servitude.
That's the dream.
That is the dream.
That release really spoke to me because I've long felt that I should make less money, be paid less, and really just do less than the minimum. So.
Yeah. Well, I think anything that makes it much, much harder to justify chasing your dream is something that everybody should get behind.
Absolutely.
Because dreams just distract us. All right, well, that was an uplifting intro. We are, somewhat ironically, going to start today's podcast by speaking about the Futures game. So rosters were released 2 days ago. We're recording this on Thursday night. So we're going to spend the first segment talking about the USA roster and the world roster. We'll take a break, and then we'll talk about Brett's June/July update of the Dynasty Top 500 list, which will be out by the time this podcast is released. Unless George sets like a land speed record for turning around a podcast, which there's no reason to do that, George, so don't do that. So we will start with the Futures game, and basically what we're going to do here is have Brett and Craig talk about some of the more interesting names who have popped up on these rosters, talk about guys who are particularly interesting to them. You know, maybe we'll get into a discussion of whose value is sort of, you know, artificially inflated by being named to these rosters. And we will go from there. And I'm mostly going to let just Brett and Craig speak because they have a much better idea of what they're talking about, as much as it pains me to say that about Craig. So we will start with the U.S. team roster, which has quite a few pretty impressive Dynasty League prospects on it, especially, I would say, in the outfield, although there is nothing really to sneeze at in the rotation either. So, Craig, we will start with you. If you had to pick one player on the U.S. roster who surprises you most in terms of, you know, where they started the season and now that they're on the Futures game roster, who would that player or players be?
It's a good question. I think the tough part for me is that the guy who surprised me the most probably had a decent chance of making it anyway, and that's someone we've talked about a decent amount before, but it's Alex Bregman. It's not a surprise to me that he's on the roster, but the fact that he has 14 home runs this year, you know, all at the upper levels of the minors. I mean, I think he had 4 home runs in minor league baseball coming into this season. So for him to display that kind of power output is extremely impressive. And so I think on the offensive side, that's someone who really caught my eye as far as prospects go. Like I said, I've routinely said I'm not extremely on board, but at some point, you know, you have to listen to what's going on in terms of power and the fact that scouts are buying it based on the way he's swinging. In terms of an arm, I'll do an arm as well, along with a bat. I'd say Josh Hader is the other guy who caught my eye. He's a guy who I've long been doubtful of as well, and that's because, you know, he has that low three-quarters or very low three-quarters arm action, and it just didn't seem like something that was going to work out. I've been aware of him since he was in the Orioles system, and, you know, moving to Milwaukee, he's really just continued to keep this type of production up, and at some point you can't ignore it. He's at AAA at this point. Colorado Springs is a really tough place to pitch, so we'll see how that goes for him. But he's someone who we kind of said he's going to have to do it all the way up, and to this point he has. So I'm definitely more willing to buy in on him this point than I was 2 years ago or even a year ago.
So I'll give my... Since we're doing a hitter and a pitcher, I'll give my two answers for that. For a hitter, it's someone who I don't think any of us would have been terribly surprised to see in this game if we were talking 2 years ago, but had kind of fallen off the map a little bit and has had some good bit of a resurgence in 2016, and that's Hunter Dozier. You know, Dozier is essentially in fantasy leagues was written off for dead last year. And I know this because Craig will laugh. In this smaller league that we're in, Dozier was the best prospect I could get for my last throwaway keeper on like the eve of the deadline. And to give you an idea of the type of player this is, the other throwaway keeper trade I made, I got Tyler Austin. So it was like a 2012 prospect list reunion. But Dozier has come out and he's done really well in AAA. He had a 1042 OPS in AA, hit over 300 with power. And then in Omaha, he's, you know, hitting 292 with 7 homers and 185 at bats. I mean, the strikeout to walk rate is always going to be an issue. He's always going to be a little aggressive of a hitter, and I think he's always going to have some contact issues. But, you know, it looks now like he's a major leaguer, which it didn't quite always look that way last year. And, you know, he's someone who would be wise not to forget about. On the mound side, the most surprising name for me to see in here was Ryan Stanek.
Yeah.
You know, part of this is because Tampa Bay's farm system isn't very good. But I still do not think he's going to be a starting pitcher.
They've shifted him to relief.
Have they?
Yeah, they've shifted him to relief. And I believe his first 3 pitches as a reliever were 99, 99, and 99.
Well, that's exactly why you don't want him starting and yep. want him relieving. Yep.
He's the guy who he looks like in relief now what people were excited by, you know, his draft year.
Sounds good. Okay, so I don't feel too terrible because he made his last start in June.
Yep.
So this isn't like a thing that I missed by 2 months. So I'm going to convince myself that I should not feel bad about that. Also, it's Ryan fucking Stanek. So... He's probably not going to matter unless he gets a closer job, and he might get a closer job because it's Tampa and who knows. But he's healthy for now and throwing really hard, and that's fun.
All right, so Brett, I'm not trying to pick on you, but when I saw these rosters released, I was a little surprised to see that Dom Smith made it. He's at 259, 319, 393 in AA. He does have 7 home runs, which for Dom Smith is a prodigious total. But this is, he's not really having the type of success that you generally associate with futures game roster players. Where are you on Smith right now? Are you still, I'm actually asking for once, but I'm not just being sarcastic. Are you still convinced that he's going to be a meaningful dynasty asset, or are you backing off at all?
Well, I'll let the fact that we're talking about him now in lieu of talking about him in the top 500 section of the podcast be a clue to that, because he did not make this iteration of the top 500. The power is not terribly surprising. Binghamton is not a bad place to hit for power. I thought that would tick up a little bit, but he's still not making as much contact as he needs to. His batting average is he's hitting .264, and it's not like he's getting particularly unlucky. I don't see this working out so well in the end, and I don't like saying that because it makes me feel bad about myself. But but this one is not going to go on my highlight reel.
Sorry, Brett. Someday you and I will just sit down with a full bottle and talk about Dom Smith and Garin Caccini.
We should probably talk about Brian Goodwin too.
He made the AAA All-Star game.
Brian Goodwin?
Yeah, there's hope for him yet, Brett.
Isn't he like 34 at this point?
I think he's 25. Is that terrifying?
I believe he's 25, yeah.
I'm going to look him up. But I believe he's 25. He's 25 decades old, actually.
Oh, disgusting.
Yeah, no, he is 25.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, look at Brian Goodwin.
Yeah, he's...
See, Brett, we're smart. We're just ahead of the curve. We're so far ahead of the curve that you shouldn't listen to us because you had plenty of time to get Brian Goodwin, and you did not need to aggressively bid for him like 4 years ago.
Sure.
Okay, Craig, a specific question for you about a guy on the Futures game roster is Chance Sisko, who's having a really weird year, hitting really well, but not for any power. And as we all know, the defensive reports on Sisko are mixed, to be polite.
Yeah.
So where do you, what does this do for Sisko? I feel like I haven't read a lot about him this year, even though he's having a pretty good year. Where are you on him?
I'm actually pretty in on him. He's, the batting line isn't going to blow anyone away, but if you're keeping in mind how low the bar is at catcher, it's actually pretty good. And while the defense is, the problem with the defense is you kind of hear like, oh yeah, it's getting better. It's he's progressing as he's kind of moved up the chain. It doesn't really look that different from when he started in terms of how good he's going to be. So I don't think, despite his athleticism, he's going to be an especially good defensive catcher. I do think he'll be good enough to stay behind the plate and make the bat playable. I think, the other thing that you have with him is that he is athletic enough. He was a high school shortstop, that if he had to move off, there's a chance that whatever his bat is playable at another position, be it third or second or something like that. I don't think it's quite the death knell that it is on a lot of catching prospects. But that being said, I do think he has a chance to stick there. And I think if you're okay with a decent, I'd say a good average, decent power, and I guess decent's probably overselling it, maybe 40 power, 45 power type guy as a catcher, then that's really not something to sneeze at these days, given the production for backstops league-wide. This is a guy who is a .323 career hitter. So if he can hit, even .290, even if it's relatively empty, that's something that's probably worth rostering on the chance that there is a little more power there.
Yeah, it is bleak out there for fantasy backstops.
Yeah, it's right not. It's not a good situation.
It's about as bad as I can remember it. And I think you hit the nail on the head in that there, as strange as it seems to say this, there's actually, I think, probably significant value in having an empty average from the catching position.
Yeah, and
especially if it's going to accumulate playing time.
And beyond that, I think it's something that we know that catchers develop a little later, right? Especially with their bats. So it could be something where he comes into some power down the line. I mean, if you want to go and look at something like Jonathan Lucroy never hit more than I don't know how many. He didn't hit for power really in the minors a ton. I guess I'm looking at it now. I'm going to strike that. It's entirely wrong.
How dare you not know Jonathan Lucroy's minor league stat line off the top
of your head? I know, it's really upsetting. He did hit for power, guys.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about Cisco is that, and this is, you know, not something you want to put too much stock in, but, you know, he will, if he stays in the organization, he'll be playing in Camden Yards. And, yep, you know, Camden Yards is a nice place for someone's power just to tick up a little bit. So that could help.
All right. So my final USA roster question before I give it up to you guys for last comments is going to Brett. And I think it's interesting. I want to go to the outfield, and I want you to sort of compare and contrast Dylan Cousins and Hunter Renfro, who I think are, Renfro, I think, has battled prospect fatigue a little bit over the past few years, whereas Cousins is really a pop-up name that people only started paying attention to this year. And despite their physical differences, you know, I think in terms of the fantasy numbers they may produce, they have some similarities. Do you still prefer Renfro to Cousins, or at this point has Cousins surpassed Renfro for you?
It's a very good point about sort of where they sit in the dynasty spectrum, meaning, you know, that the fact that, you know, Cousins is a guy who people are starting to get excited about now, and Renfro is a guy who people were more excited about 2 years ago. I still prefer Renfro, and that's even with factoring in, you know, that Cousins, I think, has more stolen base ability.
Sure.
He'll also be, you know, probably playing in a better place to hit, but I think Renfro has the better chance to hit for serious power in the majors, even with the ballpark differential and with the fact that he just doesn't, he likes to swing. I still think it's Renfro. I think it's somewhat close because I think Cousins is pretty, I think he's legit enough that he's in that neighborhood, but I'll take the guy who's the tired name.
Can I chime in on this?
Yes.
I was not asked, I would take Renfro by a mile, and it's not that Cousins isn't interesting. He certainly is, and he's kind of one of the pop up prospects, and there aren't seemingly very many this year, which might be why he's getting a little more buzz. But I think it's important to point out that Redding is an absolute launching pad for left-handed batters, and he's hitting 299, 378, 615. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's a right-hand versus lefty split. But that's what he's hitting versus right-handers. So he's crushing opposite-hand pitching. He's struggling versus same side. That's worth noting. But more to my point was that he's got an 11.06 OPS at home and a 751 OPS on the road. And 751 is nothing to sneeze at. And so he's certainly interesting, and I don't mean to diminish him as an interesting name, but this is someone who's absolutely taking advantage of his home park, which is great that he's able to do that, but it's not a sure thing he'd be able to do that in a different home park.
That is all very fair.
Yeah, I didn't realize the difference was quite that stark. That's great stuff, Craig. That's Joe Kelly-esque stuff right there.
Thank you.
That's great. Okay, guys, any last thoughts on the USA roster before we move on to the rest of the world, which, you know, I guess is important?
Not a ton. Willie Calhoun was a guy that we were all talking about out of the draft last year. Nice to see him. Mm-hmm. He's up at Double A now, or I think maybe at Triple A. Double A.
He's at Double A.
Double A, yeah. But nice to see him getting some attention.
I will just say that I don't like him as much as a lot of other people do, but I am excited to see Amir Garrett throw one inning and go all out, because I think he could be someone who becomes the most impressive pitcher in this game in a short burst. We've seen that in years past, sort of the Eddie Butler treatment, where people know a prospect is pretty good, and then they see him go all out for an inning, and then they say, oh, he's really good. Even though I don't think Garrett's really good, but he's gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah. Oh, and just really quick, Austin Meadows might be the best player in this game. Just gonna throw it out.
We're not gonna talk about Austin Meadows on this podcast anymore.
Clint Frazier and Austin Meadows on the same team.
I avoided it on purpose. I don't want to do it.
Okay, we can move on.
We can move on. Okay. All right, so we'll move on to the world roster, which has quite a bit of star power in its own right, especially when you get into the position players. Apologies to Alex Reyes aside. So, Brett, I'm going to ask you the same question that we started Craig off with last time. Who are you most surprised to see on this roster based on what you knew about them coming into the year?
So the hitter I'm most surprised to see on here is probably Josh Naylor. Not because he's really out of place from a prospect pedigree standpoint, but because he's in low A and he just stabbed a dude. So I guess you're rewarding that, but he's probably going to look overmatched in this game, even though he's advanced for low A. I think he's extremely interesting from a fantasy standpoint. But yeah, that was a name I was pleasantly surprised to see. It also doesn't hurt that the Marlins have pretty much no farm team, and the farm team they do have is all arms and the guy Josh Naylor stabbed. So yeah. On the pitching side, I'm looking forward to seeing Ronaldo Lopez. I'm not surprised that he's on here, but he was extremely effective in Double A, missed a ton of bats, throws absolute smoke. Probably the outside of Alex Reyes, he's probably the most, and maybe Joe Jimenez, probably the most likely guy to hit 100. There are a bunch of guys on this team that are likely to hit 100. I don't think I realized that before I started talking. But yeah, the three of them, I think they might all come pretty close. So Lopez is fun. He's this remind me of when we were all super excited for Yordan Ventura to throw in the Futures game, and he came out and he threw one pitch. And that was it. He got someone to fly out to center field, and that was it for him. But hopefully we'll see more of Lopez this time around.
I forgot about that Ventura tidbit. That's great.
Craig?
For my guys, I'm going to go back to the well that we were just saying, like, we were early on guys and bringing up Brian Goodwin, stuff like that. I'll go back to the heart of my heart, Jorge Bonifacio. I did not see him having a year that ended up with him on the Futures game. He's hitting 295, 357, 516 at AAA Omaha after hitting slightly under league average last year at AA. So the fact that he was at AAA to begin with and then put together this type of campaign makes you wonder if there's something in the water at Omaha between him and Hunter Dozier. I'm thrilled to see it. I've long been a believer. I don't think that's, I don't think he's a 221 ISO guy in the majors, but he's hitting for average and power, and there's nothing to dislike about that. I think he's someone who could get a chance with the Royals later this year if they ever get tired of Paolo Orlando, or I don't know who the hell else they're running out in the outfield these days.
Jared Dyson,
right, because Kane just went on the DL, and is Gordon back at this point?
Gordon is back.
Yeah, okay. I know that was relatively recent. So Gordon's back, but, you know, they've cycled through a lot of guys on that roster between, like, Whit Merrifield and Brett Eibner, and it's been a carousel. So I think he's got a shot to come up later in the season if you know, in the corner outfield if they need a boost. As an arm, I'm not really sure. I'll go with the guy that none of us had really heard of or can pronounce his name. Ben, did you want to give this a shot? You had said you wanted to.
Yeah, I believe it's Dovidas Gallo.
Yeah, so Dovidas Neverauskas. I didn't know anything about him, and so I'm certainly surprised to see him here. Outside of someone like that, you know, Jarrell Cotton is a guy who from the Dodgers system, who I wouldn't have necessarily predicted. He did not have the best of years last year, although he was getting some attention. He's kind of a smaller guy. He can definitely crank it up there. He's got a changeup some people really like, but, you know, he's striking out just under 29% in AAA this year. But the ERA isn't great. It's just under 5. And Oklahoma City, you know, as bad as the PCL is, Oklahoma City's not that bad a place to pitch. So it results the best results, but seemingly they might just be looking for arms on the world side. So I was a little surprised to see him there compared to some guys like Alex Reyes and Reynaldo Lopez, guys like that.
So, Craig, I am absolutely shocked that, you know, speaking of people we've been to too early on, I'm shocked you didn't bring up your boy Francisco
Mejia. Well, it was going to be one or the other, right? I mean, it was like, but I don't know. Based on his season, I guess you said based on coming into the season. So that's a fair point. I also could have said Ronald Guzman, frankly. He had a brutal year last year. But yeah, it's...
So where do you see Mejia now? I mean, has Mejia changed at all in your eyes? Is this the type of player you always thought he would be? Has he grown into something different? What's your take on him right now? Because I know you and I saw him, last year in spring training?
Yeah.
Not really saw him, but we saw him, what was it, a B-side game or something?
It was like BP, like live BP.
Yes, that's what it was, right.
And he took a few of the most disinterested hacks I've ever seen in my life.
He did not want to be there. 2013 Gleyber Torres level slack the day we saw him.
Yeah, it was pretty fantastic. So I'm definitely still in on him. He's someone who, look, he's not striking out a ton. He still has that potential for above average pop. I mean, he slugged .531 in low A. He got a promotion to high A. I'm definitely hoping I can see him. He's going to be in Frederick in August, so I'm definitely going to try and get out and catch him to see kind of what's different. But he's not going to walk a ton. He was at 6% in low A. I'm not really focused on that right now. He's an aggressive hitter, and that's not surprising, but he can get the bat on the ball whether he's aggressive or not. And, you know, he hit .347 in low A. This is all, you know, I don't expect him to hit .347, but I expect him to be able to hit for average. And, you know, all the things that I said applying to Chance Cisco certainly apply to Mejia. And I think he's someone who has the ability to have an above average hit and above average pop. I think he's got a little more power than Cisco. And I think, you know, they've certainly been patient with him. He's still under 21 years old, so their patience is being rewarded, and it's not like he's fallen behind developmentally or is old for the level or anything like that. So under 21 right now, going to be in high A. It'll be interesting to see how he does, but if he, you know, I don't think he needs to replicate this performance. If he holds his own or is a little better than that, I could see him flying up rankings because, you know, once you're in the upper minors, you know, he's one step away from double A, and that's really where people start catching on or buying in. So I think he has that opportunity. I don't think he's there quite yet. That is a major difference between him and Cisco right now. Cisco's hitting well at double A, but I think he has that opportunity for sure.
There we go. I was having mute trouble, like father, like son. Brett, I'm going to move away from, sort of pop-up-ish prospects and go to someone who's quite the opposite. So Dilson Herrera made the roster. We haven't seen him on any lists for a while because he's no longer technically prospect eligible, but he's still very much a prospect. So between this year and last year in AAA, He's basically a 300 hitter with 22 homers and about 650 plate appearances. I think he's a great example of a post prospect, you know, someone who people forget about. If Herrera was prospect eligible, can you give us a rough estimate of where he'd rank on a top 50?
Yeah, I think, you know, Herrera is really, you don't see this happen very often because he lost his prospect eligibility so early, and then he hasn't really been talked about. He wasn't taken all that seriously as an option to replace Daniel Murphy this offseason. And he hasn't been taken seriously at all as a replacement for David Wright, even though I think he could, even if he couldn't hold down third base, you know, Neil Walker certainly could play third base if they wanted to move him over. But you know, he's 22. He's when does he turn 23? He turns 23.
No, he's
next
just
spring.
Yeah, he just turned 22.
So he's right in the same age range as all of these prospects, which makes the post type thing even better. I would have him, you know, easily inside the top 50. Probably in the 30 to 40 range. I think his upside is not spectacular. I think he's kind of just an overall good player, not someone who's really going to be a clear top 10 option at second base, but someone who is a good option for middle infield spot for a while.
Yeah, I strongly agree, and I think dynasty owners are so frequently asking us for pop-up prospects and who's the new name that I can get, but I would much rather target a guy like Herrera, who has a bit of a track record and who is really close to the majors. Like you said, even if he doesn't get a lot of playing time this year, which still isn't totally out of the question. I know Jose Reyes signing probably hurts that a little bit, but even if he doesn't get a lot of playing time this year, certainly someone who we'd expect to figure prominently into the Mets' plans in 2017.
Yeah, well, speaking of him versus pop-up prospects, I mean, we were talking about Dylan Cousins before. He's 2 months older than Dylan Cousins.
Right. Yeah, when you put it that way, that's pretty impressive. Like last time when I asked Brett to sort of compare a more established prospect that we've gotten used to versus sort of an up-and-coming prospect who's starting to defy some expectations, this time I am going to flip it to Craig. And Craig, I want you to talk about Eloy Jimenez and Raimel Tapia, who are not entirely similar as prospects, but I think it's interesting where Tapia has always been a divisive prospect. You know, I think as we specifically on this podcast have been high on him in the past, whereas Jimenez, I feel like has really built up a lot of prospect speed, this season, or certainly at least in the past month or two. So who do you prefer right now, and is it particularly close for you?
You know, I think this is one of those situations where I prefer Tapia on the fantasy side, but I prefer Jimenez in real life. And by the way, Jimenez is 100% going in the catalog. You're not going to avoid that. It was a good recovery, but it's just need to let you know.
At this point, I've ceased to be embarrassed.
there's been a second pressing at this point.
I do prefer Tapia, and the reason I prefer Tapia is that he's just got an element of speed that Jimenez doesn't. And Jimenez certainly has an element of power that Tapia doesn't. But Tapia does have Coors Field, and he does have some pop. He does not have the type of power that Jimenez does, but he has enough. And if you want to go well-rounded, or, you know, we've talked kind of about the death of speed in a lot of ways in these last couple of years, I think, you know, Tapia having that element makes him a little bit more attractive, a little bit more rounded as a fantasy asset. But like I said, I do prefer Jimenez as an overall prospect. And part of that is, you know, he's got the huge bonus pedigree, and this is kind of what we have been expecting. He's only 19 years old. He's got 10 home runs in low A already. I wouldn't be surprised if he's someone who reaches high A this year. And again, he's not yet 20 years old. his line at low A right now, 342, 380, 549. That's pretty spectacular. And so I think, you know, the hype that we're seeing, and I expect him to fly up our midseason top 50 update. And I think it's with good reason. You know, we have a lot of people in the Midwest League on the prospect team, and everyone who's seen him has come away extremely impressed. So that's something that I'm definitely buying into on a tool standpoint. And, you know, as you said, Tapia is a bit more divisive as a prospect, and that doesn't mean he doesn't have his supporters. He definitely does, but there are questions about him. A lot of them are, you know, he's probably not a center fielder. It's something with, you know, he does the weird crouch thing with two strikes. Is the power going to come? But even if the power doesn't, there's probably 15 homers there. And, you know, in Coors, maybe that's 20, maybe it's 18. I don't know. But even if that's the case, you're getting a guy who might be a 2020 guy. And I just think that added dimension is a big deal.
You got to feel good for the Cubs that they can get a prospect. It's been so long since they.
Yeah, it's really it's nice for them.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta be happy for fans of Chicago.
Yeah,
it is.
Okay,
I have one more question before we get off the World's team.
Okay.
Bigger surprise to see on the World team and not the U.S. team: Tyler O'Neill or Dylan Unsworth?
Well, I had never really heard of Dylan Unsworth, so I'll go Tyler O'Neill.
You're also asking me? I would say Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, I did not know that Tyler O'Neill was not from the U.S.
It's a very U.S. name, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I can see it. I don't know if there's anyone who goes the other way on the U.S. team. Not really. There's no mistaking where Dansby Swanson's from. He's 100. He could not be more from the U.S.
He is from a J. Crew catalog.
And in a very different from the U.S. note, Hunter Renfro is similarly unmistakably American.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Any more team world thoughts, or can we move on to the top 500?
We can move on.
I think we can move on. But have we now determined that because Alex Reyes is on the world team, have we now determined that this is by place of signing and not by birth?
I think so, because that would also explain why Enya's on the U.S. roster. Welcome back to episode 73 of Tino. You may be asking yourself, you know, where is the Loot Crate promotion? It's actually an Easter egg in this podcast, so you're going to have to keep listening and find out when it hits. But, you know, we're doing some brand-esque time travel stuff. We're all in weirwood.net, so even though you're hearing this first, I promise you the Loot Crate commercial has already happened. In fact, the fact that it's already happened is a little bit of meta commentary with this week's or this month's Loot Crate theme. So stay tuned for that riveting entertainment. I don't know.
Jack,
the right thing
Jack Bender directed this episode of
yes,
the podcast.
Yes, he did. So hold the Loot Crate, and we'll get there eventually. All right, so we're now going to talk about Brett's June 2016 edition of the Dynasty 500 list, which in true Brett fashion will hit on July 1st. So every about 6 months, Brett does the Dynasty 500 list all over again. Is it even more often than that now, Brett, or is it still just twice a year?
It's either two or three times a year.
Yes, that's good. I'm glad you've slowed down a little bit for a while. I think when I first met you, it came out every 6 weeks, and that was a little bit disconcerting. But we have the newest available edition right now, just the four of us. It'll be live tomorrow. But we are going to talk about lists because we didn't have any other topics, and this is really our comfort zone. We're very good at debating minute differences in lists. So, Brett, I will kick it out to you, and you can unveil your latest edition of the 500.
All right. So this obviously is available at thedynastyguru.com, and it will be up in time for the three-day weekend. So there you go. So let's start at the almost at the top, because no one cares about Mike Trout anymore for these things. He's the clear number one for me here, and there's really not much of an argument, I think, that can be made for anyone else. Moving down from there, I think it's pretty safe to say that Harper is locked in at two. But are we now opening we're now opening the third spot back up. It was the person who came in at number three in the preseason was Carlos Correa, and he is no longer the number three person on this list. So before I reveal who the number three person is on this list, I know we talked about this a couple months ago, but Craig, where are you at here? Who's the best Dynasty League asset besides Mike Trout and Bryce Harper?
Well, I think that I don't know that Harper is as much as a lock as you might want him to be. Because I do think that there's a real chance that Manny Machado is as good or better than Harper in any given year. I think the upside on Harper is that he's got a little bit of age on him, but I think it's like, what, 3 months even? And he's certainly got more power potential, but if we're looking at this season as any evidence, and even last season, I mean, Machado hit 35 home runs last season. He has 18 this season. He's hitting for 80. He's got 80 points in average on Harper, and he plays a more valuable position. So I look, understanding that this is, you know, a year to a year and a half of data that we're looking at, I would probably put Harper second, but I don't think it's a stone cold lock. And I certainly think you have the opportunity to argue for Machado third, or on your list you have Kershaw, and I don't really have a problem with that, except I am obviously a bit concerned about his back injury at this point.
Yeah. Ben, what about you?
I agree, so I'll keep it short. I will say that for me, I would definitely put Machado at three. It's not that hard of a choice for me. I feel like the bigger question is between Kershaw and then the next group of shortstops that we have. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's clearly Trout, Harper, Machado.
Sounds good. So I think that group is close as well. I lean Kershaw just because, more because I think there's the difference between Kershaw and everyone else, or when I say everyone else, or the average best pitcher on a fantasy team, is just continues to get larger and larger. And obviously the back, which just, the news which just came out today is a concern. And maybe if I hadn't finalized the list before that happened, maybe that's just enough to tweak Machado ahead of him. But there's no turning back now, and I don't really mind. I think it's stupid to make a decision based on what looks to be a 2 to 3 week thing with a given player, yeah, especially when you're up at this point.
And I know Kershaw's a pitcher, so he's inherently more injury prone, but I mean, to this point in their career, Machado's had way more injury problems.
Yeah.
Just because Kershaw's on the mound, I guess you have to say that, the odds are less in his favor than they are in Machado's, but the legs do still worry me a little bit from time to time.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable, and I don't think it's a given that you have to move him because of the back injury. I mean, I think the scary part is that he had an epidural, and that they're not even committing to having him back, the first eligibility that he is after this DL stint. But the upside is that he had a shoulder injury. At the beginning of, was it last season or 2 seasons ago when they opened in Australia, he went on the DL for the first time in his career, and he came back and was as good as we've seen him. And he's been that good, for a long while now. And he's been basically the best we've ever seen him this year. So
it's terrifying how good he is.
I agree.
Yeah. So the funny thing about the top of this list is that it is as bad as the positions are overall, it is chock full of shortstops and third basemen now. Just looking in the top, top 11, there are four shortstops and three third basemen. And actually, you can count Machado as a fourth third baseman also if you count his eligibility, and that also doesn't even include Josh Donaldson, who's down at number 13, just out of that first group. But how do you feel about the ordering of the shortstops and how close do you think they are? So on my list, it goes Machado, then Correa, then Bogarts, then Seager. Is that the right order for you? And is there a gap anywhere on that list?
Yeah, it's the right tier and pretty close to the right order. I would go Machado, gap. I think I would go Bogarts and then Correa, gap, Seager. I have no problem with Correa over Bogarts because I will begrudgingly admit that I think Correa has more upside, although I think Bogarts is a little better right now. I don't know if we want to get too much further into this list. I think the one change I would make in this range is I might have Nolan Arenado even higher than you have him. You have him at 8. I think I might take him over Mookie Betts, which is strange for me to say as a Red Sox fan. I don't know. I guess I really can't be mad at you for ranking someone 8th overall, and I'm not entirely sure who besides Betts I'd push down, but I feel like somehow 8 doesn't really do him justice.
Well, the top ten is extraordinarily strong, because you have Paul Goldschmidt, who was number 5 last time around on this list. He's number 10 now, and he hasn't done anything really to warrant a big drop. It's the guys that have jumped up that have really made a difference. I would venture to say that the top 10 in dynasty leagues right now are as strong of a top 10 as we've had since I've been playing dynasty. So for at least a decade.
Yeah, it's just pretty
the fun. Combination of age and talent is unbelievable.
Yeah, and frankly, I think you can extend that beyond 10.
Yeah,
it's just incredible the amount of depth there is in total.
Yeah, and it really shows that if you don't have a superstar on your team, it's tough. There is a gap after that big top tier of really excellent young players, and it's a tough gap to make up. But let's move on to some arms and how you guys feel about them. I mean, after Kershaw, the next highest arm on this list is at 17. That's Jose Fernandez. The rest of the top 5, as far as pitchers are concerned, is Fernandez at 17, Chris Sale at 19. Noah Syndergaard at 21 and Jake Arrieta at 24. Craig, are those the right top 5 for you, or is there anyone else you would put in there?
I think there's got to be the case for Strasburg to be in there, given how good he's been going back to post DL last year. You know, before the season started, we talked about how he had the potential to be the best non-Kershaw pitcher in baseball, and I really think on some level he was living up to that before his recent injury. We'll see how he recovers from yet another injury. He had 2 ribs pop out, which is obviously an incredibly painful situation, but we'll see how he bounces back from that. But I certainly think he has the case to be in that mix, and you know, I think on pure upside I might take him over a Jake Arrieta, but that's potentially kind of hot takey. I don't know that it's close enough that it doesn't matter, and I think the safe play is to take Arrieta because he's obviously healthier and his ability is probably like 98% of what Strasburg's upside is. So again, that might be a little hot takey, but I think he's at least in the conversation there.
No, Craig, I don't think it's hot takey because I was thinking almost the exact same thing. I'm not sure I have the courage to take Strasburg over Arrieta, but I thought really long and hard about it when we were helping Brett with this list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think on talent alone, I think it's absolutely fair, and I probably would. But it's the injuries.
Yeah,
I mean,
and you can't get around that.
No, you can't. He has a hard time staying healthy, and for various reasons, he's already had Tommy John. He's got, you know, that's there are a lot of people on this list that have already had Tommy John.
No, but he had it. He had a shoulder injury. Now he has a rib/back injury. I mean, that's
But yeah, I mean, Strasburg is the number six pitcher on this list, so it's not like I think that's crazy or anything. I absolutely understand the argument for Strasburg ahead of Arrieta. I just with the injury concerns,
you
just do not.
Yeah, but and you just said, is there anyone else kind of that you'd consider? The next guy you have after Strasburg is Madison Bumgarner, and I don't think he's quite in that tier. I think he's got all the security that Arrieta has without near the upside, personally. And so I think Strasburg's the other guy you consider in that top five, and I don't think Bumgarner quite tops it.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. So let's move down a little bit and talk about some of the other young players who have jumped up this list a good bit on this iteration. And let me know whether you think, just off the top of your head, without really going too much into it, whether you think the jump seems reasonable. So Gregory Polanco jumped from 65 in the preseason to 22 on this list. Ben, does that feel fair to you?
I love it. I'd have Polanco ahead of Nomar Mazara at 20. I remain in love with Polanco, and I am still furious that I could not find a way to trade for him this offseason, because now I know I'll never have that chance again.
Fair enough. Craig, Christian Yelich started the season at 70 overall and is 32 on this list. Does 32 seem about right for you here?
It's a tough question. I think it's a little strong for me. I certainly understand it. I mean, he's putting together a great season. He's hitting he's slugging in a way that he kind of hasn't before. But it's just that he's still hitting ground balls on just under 60% of the balls he puts in play. And I just don't know how you sustain a .475 slugging percentage when you're putting the ball on the ground that often. And if that's the case, then I think he loses some of his panache.
All right. So, Ben, back to you. Ian Desmond was 117 on this list. And this is going to be odd because this isn't a young player anymore. Was 117 on the preseason list, and you know, part of that was because he didn't have a job when it came out. He didn't sign until very late in the off season. But he's at number 60 right now, having an extremely strong season for the Rangers. Is that too bullish? Not bullish enough? Feels about right for you?
I will just go moderately too bullish. I totally believe in the power-speed combo, and I think he'll have that for another few years, but I do not believe in the average. I mean, his BABIP's almost, what, 400? Yeah, it's 392. So I don't think this average is real. He is striking out less than he has the last few years, which is nice to see, but I think I'd probably have him sort of below this next tier of players. Maybe I'd have him closer to the Adam Jones, Johnny Cueto area than I would. You know, you have him above Corey Kluber and, actually, see, now that I look at it, I kind of get where you have him. It gets tougher the farther we move down, right? The tiers get bigger. So I think this is fine. There are some players like 15 slots below him that I prefer over him, but there are a bunch of players in between those two that I think I prefer Desmond to. So maybe a little bit strong, but certainly I think a reasonable ranking.
Okay. So, Craig, last one for you. Will Myers started the season at 250 on this list and has had a healthy and very strong first half, showing a lot of the power that was once hinted at. and is up to 83. So he's inside the top 100. What's your temperature on Will Myers right now?
I'm a fan of Myers. I've been a fan of Myers kind of the whole time. I traded him in a league that we're in together, a 20-team league, for Joe Ross before the season. I don't entirely regret that because I've also always been a fan of Joe Ross. But I think Myers is certainly making the case that I shouldn't have done it. I think slugging 530 in Petco, even though it's the revamped Petco, is highly impressive. And I think that, you know, this is the guy that we thought we were getting when he put out that rookie season where he was so good. And it's a very similar profile to what he did then. I think that he has the potential to implode. And when I say that, I mean via injury. We've seen multiple wrist injuries for him that have sapped his power for a couple years. And it's great to see that he's, you know, come back from those. But at the same time, those can crop up again, and we've seen the toll that they've taken. So if they do, I'd be pretty concerned about, you know, what kind of toll it takes for him. Because, you know, there are guys who are able to take an injury and kind of come back in stride. That doesn't seem to be the case for him. So I certainly appreciate where you have him. I don't have a problem with it, but I think he's one of the more volatile properties in that region.
I completely agree that he's very volatile. Yeah. Ben, one last quick one for you. Jackie Bradley Jr. Has taken a nearly 250 spot jump on this list, which is one of the biggest jumps overall among anybody, even including new entrants. You watch him more than either me or Craig do, and people have been talking about him less since the hitting streak ended. Where do you think he fits right now, and what's the state of Jackie Bradley Jr.?
I think pretty much right where you have him is makes perfect sense to me. You know, it's sort of like I said last time. You know, I might take guys like Tim Anderson or Jerickson Profar over him, who are a little bit further down your list. But you know, you have him above Hunter Pence and Chris Archer and Adam Eaton, and I think that's sort of a no-brainer. He's for real. The strikeout rate is way down. He has a much better plan at the plate now. And, like, you know, that's always the prospect we were sold on in the minor leagues. You know, we never thought he'd hit for this much power, but he was just so polished and so poised at the plate. And that all fell apart for him, obviously, in 2014 and for a significant portion of 2015. But I think he's always had this ability in him, and I fully believe it. And I think he is a 20 to 25 homer outfielder with a good average and 10 to 15 stolen bases a year. So, you know, not a fantasy superstar, but a very strong fantasy second or third outfielder.
Yeah. So let's kind of talk about the opposite here and talk about some players that have dropped a little bit. Craig, let's talk about Marcus Stroman, who I ranked him at 141. I think that's still a pretty optimistic ranking, but it's almost a 50-point drop from the beginning of the season. He hasn't looked great. He hasn't been missing a ton of bats. He's, you know, he's been giving up hard contact. How concerned are you about Stroman long term? Do you think this is more of a blip and he's a, you know, strong fantasy starter?
I'm pretty concerned. I mean, this is a guy that we brought up when we did kind of the shares game, what, two podcasts ago, in terms of struggling starters. And I voiced my concerns then, too. This is someone who has never struck guys out in the majors the way he did in the minors. In the minors, you saw some smaller sample, to be sure. But, you know, he had 111 innings in AA where he struck out 28% of guys. He's never been over 21%. In the majors, and he's been well below that since returning. He was at 17.5% in a few innings last year, and he's below that this year, and that's really concerning. It's great that he can generate so many ground balls, especially for a guy his size, and he's a guy I'm rooting for and a guy I like, But at some point you have to acknowledge kind of what you're seeing in front of you. The homer per fly ball rate seems real just because he's a shorter guy, doesn't get as much plane on his stuff. So if he misses up in the zone, there's a good chance it's a fly ball and that it can be hit for a fair distance. Fortunately, he's got so much stuff that he's able to, when he can keep it down in the zone, he gets those ground balls. Now, I think, you know, where you have him is pretty optimistic. I mean, I'm looking at some of the names behind him, like Aaron Nola, Jameson Taillon, Tyler Glasnow, even a Julio Tehran. I mean, Tehran has put up multiple seasons in his career better than what we've seen out of Marcus Stroman, and he certainly had some bad ones too. But given kind of how Tehran's performed this year and how he's performed in the past, I mean, the ability he's shown, I'm a little bit surprised to see him as a fantasy asset behind a guy like Stroman, who pitches in a tough place to pitch in terms of giving up home runs and has really not shown us much to get excited about all year. And again, it's only half a season, but we're 100 innings in. It's certainly not, you know, a full season to get down on, but it is concerning, and it's not nothing. You can't just hand brush it away, you know?
I know, for one.
Yeah.
I also know that Brett's pretty bad with the mute button, too. Okay, well, I'll take over the Brett game then for a moment. So we were at Stroman, who is minus 48. So let's go with the player who is minus 41, Brad Zimmer, who's having a really weird year in AA. I think a lot of us thought he might be in the majors by this point, but instead he's hitting 240, but 366, 485 in AA. 12 homers and 27 steals. What's probably more concerning is that the strikeout rate is up substantially, but you know, what has Zimmer's performance this year done for his prospect status in your mind, Craig?
Yeah, I'm taking a step back as well on Zimmer. He's someone I was very excited about, and obviously the OPS looks great because he's slugging the ball, and he does have the power and speed combo that's worthwhile, but he's really someone who I thought would hit for average and who I wasn't sure would kind of be the type of power bat he's shown so far this year, and I'm not sure that he continues to hit like for that type of power, especially if he's going to struggle to hit for average in the first place. It's a weird thing because his skill set has always kind of been touted as someone who's going to hit really well, and so to see him struggle on that front, well, kind of morphing into a three true outcomes guy. He's striking out 29%. He's walking in the double digits in over 14% this year. It's just a weird thing for someone who's as athletically gifted as he is. You know, he's not. It's not like he looks like Adam Dunn. You know, he's not your hefty slugger who you would think, oh, that's a three true outcomes guy. But that's kind of what he's done to date this season. And the big concern is that he's 24 years old, he'll be 24 this year. He's 23 right now, but he's 23. He's in AA. He got 50 games just about last year, and he struggled last year as well. So at AA, so it does start to kind of add up, and it's not something that you quit on him for, but it is something that maybe you show a little hesitation that we weren't showing otherwise, because he really had been on kind of a straight shot up until he hit AA last year.
Yeah, it is. It's really a bizarre turn of events. Like, maybe you haven't seen him in person, so you can't answer this. Are you someone who thinks the hit tool can come back, or do you think this is sort of indicative of who he is at this point?
No, I do think it can come back. I saw him in person a ton last year. I have not seen him this year, I don't want to speak to it like I have. But I can't imagine that there's a situation that's taken place that he can't get back to the guy I saw. I must have seen him 7+ times last year, and I guess I did see him in spring training this year. I saw him launch a home run off a 97 mile per hour pitch from Adrian Hauser. So he looked good the very brief instance I saw him in AAA. But you know, he was someone that wasn't extremely long to the ball that would indicate that he'd be striking out near 30%. I don't know if it's a mechanical change for him just yet. It's something I'm looking into and have reached out to people about. But that's definitely something to investigate and keep an eye on in terms of what reports come out on him. And we do have people on the team who have seen him throughout the year, but they haven't, the reports kind of have clashed at times. I know we've had Adam McInturf see him and really kind of liked it overall. I think the same for Adam Hayes. Jeff Paternostro has also seen him along with Jarrett Seidler on the team, and that they have not been impressed by what they've seen. They really didn't like it at all. So I guess it could kind of depend on the night you catch him. You know what I mean? And that to me says that there's something still there. You know, if he has those good nights, then maybe that's something he can get back to. But there's certainly multiple nights it seems that he's off, and those nights seem to be winning more often than not in this case, despite, again, the power uptick. But the speed has to be exciting from a fantasy angle, that he's maintaining that kind of aggressiveness on the base paths. He only had 44 stolen bases last year on the whole. So he's got 27 already at the midway point. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and you know, we always caution people to take minor league stolen base totals with the biggest grain of salt.
Yeah, he's not a 40 stolen base guy I would anticipate in the majors, but he does have athleticism.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, if he's this successful at base running at the minors, and you know he has some natural speed, perhaps you could hope he gets between 15 and 20 as a major league.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So real quick, let's go over two pitchers who have seen pretty precipitous drops in value. First one is Garrett Richards, who is at minus 134, falling from 100 overall to 234 overall. And Tyson Ross, who is minus 146, falling from 108 to 254 overall. Craig, if you had to bet on Richards or Ross moving forward, who would you pick?
I'll take Garrett Richards. I know he's got the injury, and he's had injuries in the past too, but I've just never been in on Ross, and part of that was that the likelihood for injury, and that he walks so many people even when he is on. He certainly misses enough bats to compensate for it when he's on, but just the fact that he's constantly issuing free passes and then had never really put together a full season before a couple years ago, I know that was something I harped on and something I was certainly wrong about for the last season and a half, but I think it's still a point that can be appreciated at this point because he is injured again. That being the case, I'll take Richards. I don't know that there's a huge rationale. I don't know that I have a problem with someone preferring Ross because he's probably had a little bit of a higher high as far as fantasy goes. But I do think Richards has a better chance of coming back effectively.
Sounds good to me. Brett, do you have a Richards versus Tyson Ross opinion?
I feel more confident in Richards being healthy long-term than Ross, even though he's the one who's sidelined for the extended period of time now. I think it's a more straightforward recovery. You know, Ross is, you know, he's had more shoulder stuff, and that's scary.
And he's not healthy now either. So,
yeah, well, he's more healthy, right?
Certainly.
There's a better chance that he pitches in 2016 than Richards.
Sure, yeah, but yes, absolutely. But I do think that by the same token, when you're deciding between these two guys at this point, you're probably thinking long-term more than short-term.
Exactly. So,
yeah, that's why I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who else has made big drops?
It's your list, shouldn't you know?
This is true. That is really more of a conversation starter. So, another pitcher who has a big had a bit of a tumble the last couple months, Scott Kazmir. Craig, give us the 15-second version of why Scott Kazmir is bad now.
Do you know the second half Scott Kazmir that shows up the last two seasons? That's just full-time Scott Kazmir now.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Craig, I commend you for keeping your spirits high today, given the Kershaw DL and the general state of the Dodgers rotation. You've done well.
I've been spiraling pretty hard today.
Oh, for years, really.
that's true. I mean, that's the 15-second version. He's throwing plenty hard. I don't know. He's just not that good. He gives up these huge blow-up innings. I mean, every single time I think he's going to give up 12 runs, he only gives up 5 and manages to go 5 innings. But, this is the thing I said about the Dodgers as a whole, but I meant to kind of implicate Kazmir. The only non-Kershaw pitcher they've had that to go more than 6 innings since June 1st is Kenta Maeda, and he's done it 3 times, and he's never finished 7. So, I mean, as a fantasy property, not only has Kazmir been bad, but he's not even the type of guy that, okay, if he's putting up a 4 ERA, but going 7 innings, you know, at least every now and then, he might get you a win. He doesn't. He goes 5, maybe 6 innings, and the Dodgers' bullpen is so bad that they give up any potential lead he might have. So, from a fantasy aspect, I just don't see him having much value at all, and I don't see him kind of recovering to establish it in the next couple of years.
Fair enough. Ben, I put Clay Buchholz at the very, very end of this list.
Yeah.
Is there any reason for you why he should be on this list?
No. I mean, yes, he was good last year, so I get that it can often seem more... You know, when a player is going this bad, it's easy to forget how recently ago he was a productive fantasy asset. And if anybody is capable of wild swings and performance, it's Clay Buchholz. But considering his age and the fact that even when he's good Clay Buchholz, it's really usually only half a season of good Clay Buchholz before he hits the DL anyway, I am all set with Buchholz. I think he'd make my top 750 list. But I would not have had him anywhere really near the end of this one.
Okay. Let's stop talking about pitchers who have dropped a ton, because this is getting kind of depressing. Let's talk about guys that have showed up on the list. Some of the interesting names. Well, we covered one of them before. We covered Eloy Jimenez when we were talking about the futures game. Let's talk about Ronald Acuna of the Braves. Craig, how excited should fantasy owners be about Acuna, and what should they expect?
I think they have a reason to be, I would go so far as to say, very excited, but that's going to come back and bite me, because this is a guy that people were, I don't know, what, 2 days into the season were like, oh, he's the next Victor Robles. And maybe that's true from a, he's burst onto the scene and he's got a high ceiling and he's already producing as a young guy in the lower minors aspect, but people are going to want to blow him all the way up, and I don't think he has quite the impact tools that Robles does, and he's not going to show up as high on just regular prospect lists in general, because he's not the up the middle guy that Robles is. But and since he is in a corner, you know, I don't think he doesn't have the luxury of not hitting for power necessarily the way that Robles does. But that being said, he's 18 years old and hitting 300 in low A and walking almost 12% of the time. That's a really big deal. He's not slugging a ton. He's 18, so he has time to grow into his body, and I firmly believe he will be able to hit for some power. But, you know, how far we want to go with that is, I think people who tend to play fantasy and look at stat lines to get kind of a grip on where guys are going to say, he's 18 years old, he's doing this in low A, it's only going to get better as he gets older. And, you know, as we kind of always preach, this is not a linear development. You can't just extrapolate what he's doing now to what he's doing or to what he will do going forward. I don't think he has the ceiling of a Robles personally. I think there's polish in effect here that he's able to do this at such a young age. That being said, it's highly impressive and certainly worth getting excited about.
All right. One more of these for Ben. I'll go to a different Drew Pomeranz has been really impressive over the first half of the season. He was a high draft pick. He is pitching in a very friendly environment. He has just barely slid into the top 300 here. Do you think this is something that is reasonably sustainable for Pomeranz? And do you think he is any sort of good bet to stay healthy?
No, on both accounts. It doesn't surprise me that Pomeranz has proven himself capable of producing these types of numbers. No, for all the reasons you just said, obviously. Someone with a high draft pedigree, left-hander in the best pitcher's park in baseball. It makes sense to me, but at the same time, you know, the command is still an issue here. We have absolutely no reason to believe that he's capable of staying healthy. He's also, I think, someone who's fairly likely to be traded. If not this season, then perhaps in the offseason or next season. I don't think he's a long-term Padre because I believe he's a free agent after 2017. So you can't even really bank on contextual factors helping him forever. So no, not someone who I think is a good bet, not something I'd be looking to buy, but, if you have him right now, good for you because it means you probably got him for next to nothing. But not someone I'd be particularly interested in going all in on in fantasy leagues.
He is, he's got 3 years of service time.
3 years left.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, 3 years in. So yeah, 3 years left, I guess.
So after 2018, or
I believe, yeah,
yes, after 2018.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe he won't be traded then. I thought it was 1 year.
He's part of that. He's part of that same super class of free agents. It's Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and Drew Pomeranz,
of course,
and Enya.
Episode 73 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Go to thedynastyguru.com to look at the latest iteration of Brett's top 500 Dynasty League prospects. Dive right into the comments there and enjoy because people get very, very mad online. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in Clayton is disabled Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
That hurt my heart. have a loot crate ad or not?
No. The last theme is futuristic.
Oh, it's perfect!
Oh, fuck. It's futuristic. Futures guide.
God damn it. We totally forgot to look that up before we started that.
Commercial should just be us being like, holy fuck, it's the future, is the theme of Loot Crate. It's organic advertising, guys. It's perfect.
Did you know that you get $45 in value per box?
I did know that. And did you know that the box is sent to you? I don't know anything else about it.
By drone.
Yeah, they...
futuristic.
You don't have to go to a store. It is... They bring at least $45 worth of value to you via box every month.
So how do you sign up for this service?
I believe you go to lootcrate.com/Tino.
BP/BP.
So don't do that. Yeah, lootcrate.com/BP. Craig, is it the same theme every month, do you know, or...
To my knowledge, it's a new theme every month.
Oh, okay. And do they repeat, or are the themes unique?
I believe the themes are unique, as are prospects, which is why you don't want to comp one theme to another.
Okay, so Loot Crate. You know, clearly when we mention things on this podcast, they get crazy investor money, which means that it's something you should be interested in.
Yeah, did we talk about that the last time?
I don't know. I mean, we should have. Yeah. I think maybe it's, you know, we don't really need to talk about it. People just know.
Well, I'm just saying for future advertisers, Loot Crate got the Tino bump.
They definitely got the Tino bump.
Almost immediately, too. It was a little startling.
10-figure investment, Series A.
I'm pretty sure they meant to invest that money in Tino. And they
it's a common mistake. It's not the first time that's happened.
Do you think we could get Enya to sponsor the podcast?
And he does not have $8.5 million.
I feel like if she did, she would invest it in Loot Crate and not us, though.
Yeah, well, who can say where the road goes and what Enya would invest in?
Well, given what happened with Brexit, she might have £10,000.
Not worth as much these days.
No, not worth as much anymore.
Oh, actually, Loot Crate really knows what's up because Dystopia Month was the same month as Brexit. So they're actually very on top of this.
They got Dystopia for Brexit. They got Futuristic for the Futures game. It's perfect.